Well, men and the women who love them should pay special attention to our discussion about an article that recently appeared in the New York Times titled Male Infertility Linked with Prostate Cancer. It tells of study results that show that men who have infertility problems early in life, discovered perhaps as they try to impregnate their partners, may have an increased chance of developing prostate cancer or testicular cancer later in life. In fact, the study suggests they may have three times the possibility of developing these cancers. This is a place we need some analysis from an expert, so many coulds or mays. So we've asked Dr. J.C. Trussell, assistant professor of urology and director of the Male Infertility and Sexual Function Department at Upstate, to tell us more and to comment on the article. Good morning, Dr. Trussell.
Good morning.
And welcome to HealthLink On Air. Is this news to you? This study is very interesting.
This is definitely an interesting study. It was performed by a very prominent researcher out in California who looked at 22,000 men who developed cancer and then went back to other men who had reproductive assistance to have children, inferring that they had infertility, and as you said, discovered that they were three times more likely to have an aggressive form of prostate cancer, and that it's still a bit speculative determining if this genetic problem infers trouble repairing cells that could turn into cancer. So what we're thinking is the cells are turning over rapidly to have sperm production, and if there's a problem in that production of sperm cells, that the genetic repair mechanism may not be normal, and if there's other cells that need repair, like cancer cells in the testicle or cancer cells in the prostate, the body may have a problem repairing itself and leading to cancers.
Interesting. All right, now I'm going to go back and try to break down what you just said, because for some of us, once you start talking about DNA, you get confusing. So, all right, we want to go back. They took men who had prostate and testicular cancer later in life and went back and tried to figure out if they'd been infertile earlier. Was that it?
You're exactly right.
Okay. And some of them had children, but not all of them had children by natural means.
You're right.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So we've got that part of it. But this is a genetic problem we're talking about. And that's where you get into the DNA conversation.
Yeah, it is speculative at this point. There's a growing body of literature that looks over the possible genetic problem linking infertility to subsequent cancers.
Does that suggest then that infertility is genetic to begin with?
There's definitely some genetic links to infertility.
Okay. So there could be other reasons for infertility. Genetics is just one of them?
That's correct. The most common is dilated veins called varices, dilated veins in the scrotum, which would be a non-genetic. That's a more mechanical problem.
Okay.
But we're discovering for the most common diagnosis of infertility, which is idiopathic, meaning we have no idea what's causing it, I believe there's a genetic component to that.
You do. All right. So now, if I also understand, it's not to say that all men who develop prostate cancer had infertility problems. It's just that infertility may lead to prostate cancer later.
The current thought is that maybe patients who have infertility might consider earlier screening than a typical man for prostate cancer.
I see. Okay, so like the PSA test that the men typically get?
Right. We currently screen African-American men and men who have family members with prostate cancer, be it a father or brother, at age 40. Other men, we start screening at age 50. So this might be another category where they start screening with a blood test and a rectal exam at 40 years of age.
Really? Very interesting. So this really is a message for men who have struggled with infertility problems, not men who have developed prostate cancer.
You're right.
Okay, so let's talk to those men who've had infertility problems, or let's talk to their partners, because I think quite often it's their partners who are spurring these kinds of testing on. You know, they're curious and concerned about their partners. So let's talk to men who have had infertility problems. Short-term, long-term, are we talking about men who have not been able to conceive, or don't we know yet?
I don't know that we know. We can't nail down like what level of fertility that these men should be screened earlier for prostate or testicular cancer. It is, again, speculative at this time, but as we understand this potential problem, I suspect there'll be long-term studies where there's infertility men who then, over the next 10, 20 years, are screened for prostate cancer to see if these exact same men develop the more aggressive forms of prostate cancer.
Let's look at this study because I find sometimes that if you look at how the study was done, it can even tell you more. So these men, you said there were 22,000 and some men who were studied, but they had already developed prostate cancer or testicular cancer. So they must have only been reporting on the past. They must have just asked them questions, or could they have looked at their medical records that far back?
Yeah, that's insightful. What they did is they went to a cancer registry in California and picked up all the guys who developed prostate cancer. Then they used a different registry to see how many men had infertility concerns. And then the article reports using some mathematical model. So they made some assumptions to see what percentage of men were infertile, and then in a different category, which percentage of those men would have cancer, and try to figure out if there is a correlation or not.
I see. All right. You know, but it also raises the question, if you have these men who were infertile and they then have this genetic predisposition toward these cancers, and then they do conceive, are they then setting up their offspring for problems too?
I think that's the key to this study is more research needs to be done, but the concern would be if there is a genetic predisposition, that we learn how to screen for that to make sure that it's not being transmitted to the offspring.
Yeah, because that would be really, my concern would be, I mean, the men can deal with what the men can deal with, but they would need to be concerned, and genetic testing and those kinds of things, that's how we learn about whether we're really setting up our children for problems.
We already have some knowledge into this arena. It's called Y chromosome microdeletion. So a female has
two
X's.
Oh my gosh, let's say that again.
A female has two X chromosomes to make her a female. To make a male, you need one X and one Y. And on that Y chromosome, there's some testing that can be done. If some code is missing, we find that in severely infertile men.
And interesting.
If that sperm with that missing Y chromosome is used to produce a boy, that boy will more than likely be infertile from the start. So we already have some of these tests that can be done.
Very good. So patients really need to be talking to their doctors about these kinds of things, don't they?
Yes, they do.
And men with infertility problems need to be looking at getting screened early.
I agree.
Very good. Dr. Trussell, thank you so much for coming by this morning.
You're welcome.
Hi. I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's checkup from the neck up. Dear departed Uncle Denny and the anti-stuffing ourselves at the buffet experiment. Well, dear listeners, science marches slowly. And even though I didn't know it, I've been waiting for science to explain one of the unforgettable moments of my childhood for some 40 years. First, the new science. Researchers put folks in an MRI. One at a time, of course, and watched what parts of the brain were working while they were doing one, then two, then three tasks simultaneously. They found that when the brain is asked to do two things at once, it divides itself into the right and left frontal cortex, and these two parts can keep track of two tasks simultaneously and do a good job with both. However, add a third task, and the brain can't do it, making more and more mistakes. Now, back to my tender years. I was visiting my dear uncle and aunt, and they took me to an all-you-can-eat buffet. Uncle Denny, who loved getting his money's worth as much as he loved eating, marched me along the long food table past one delectable after the next until we ended at a man in the chef's hat standing behind a steaming pot of king crab legs. Uncle turns and says, "Concentrate on this, Richie. Concentrate on this." And we did. Now, Uncle was a big guy. Soon he had a towering pile of ravaged crab legs in his discard bowl. He'd undone his belt and the waist button on his pants. Between bites, he was urging me to watch for a new pot of legs being brought in so we could get there before they were all snatched up. Out of the corner of his eye, he spots the waiter delivering. He leaps up, "Come on, Richie," and beelines over, totally forgetting that his pants were unattached to the bod. Half-mast they go, and the boxers, striped and glorious, bloom into vision. He's yanking them up in a stumbling trot, still calling me forward. A totally unforgettable moment. And just the other day at a buffet, about to overeat big time, I realize the aforementioned experiment explained not only my dear uncle's blooming boo-boo, but why we all overdo it at buffets. One half of the brain focuses on eating the tasties, the other half on getting our money's worth. And that's all a two-track brain can handle, so we lose sight of not wanting to totally overeat. So thanks, Uncle Denny, for that early science demonstration. And I'm Dr. Rich Buffet Brain O'Neill. Thanks for tuning in.